Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. Stone Payton, Katie Galley here with you this morning. Katie, this is going to be a fantastic show. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the lady responsible for the food sitting out here.
It smells really good in here right now.
But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce founder and CEO for City Smart. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Donald Hawkins. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Are you going to be able to focus on this conversation with all this great food out here? But which you've been to this place before, right?
I have. I'm a huge fan of Babette's, and I tell her that the sauce she has in front of us, I typically will drink.
he orders it by the glass.
But I will say, disclaimer, she does not want you to do that. It's not healthy. She did tell me that.
You got to put it out there. That's good.
You got to put it out there.
Yeah, yeah. Just throwing it out there. So, Donald, what are you doing with City Smart? What are you guys doing over there?
So, City Smart was developed originally to help small businesses grow. There's 28 million small businesses in the U.S. and they're struggling right now. Traditional forms of advertising can be pretty expensive and there's a lot of competition out there. And we recognize that a lot of small businesses were really focusing on social media. And we've all seen what's been happening with that over the last couple months and years. So we wanted to develop a mobile application that was city specific that helped local consumers really connect to businesses. And we do that by removing the algorithm. If a small business earns an audience, we give them the ability to instantly engage with that audience without any type of complexities in between. So really happy about that. And from that point, it's now kind of pivoted to a communication tool. Well, we realize in 2018, cities are using Facebook and Twitter to communicate with constituents. Mm-hmm. And that's the fastest form of communication up until now. But now we also partner with police departments, municipalities, schools, colleges, and they can instantly push notifications directly to consumers. So Wow. We kind of take the word community and the corny side of it. You know, you look at comm for communications and unity at the end of it. We really kind of want to merge the two and help everybody stay in contact with everybody that wants to.
Wow. So when you say you remove the algorithm, what do you mean? Did you create an app and that it's more accessible to just anybody can use it? What do you mean by removing
Correct.
The algorithm?
Yeah. Most applications and software platforms have some sort of coding in between the businesses and their audience.
Okay.
And businesses will typically have to pay that platform each instance that it wants to reach the audience. Well, we remove that algorithm where if you build a following of 5,000 people on our platform every single day, at least one time, you can push notification that will buzz directly on their phone without any other scrolling of pages or additional fees to pay. We charge a one-time monthly fee to use the platform, and you have instant access to your audience every day.
Wow. So how did you come up with this? How did you see that this was a particular pain point for small businesses and come up with this idea?
Well, so the truth is I've moved a lot for a job that I was working with, and every city that we got to, you know, being the go-getter that I am, I'm hitting the ground running. I'm finding out who's who and what restaurants are the best to go to. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at my poor wife, you know, figuring out, man, I got to find a new dentist. I got to find a new salon. And we started looking at these different websites and realized it's too many different event sites. There are no general business directory sites. Everybody has their own directory. Wow. And then we realized even with Google, as awesome as Google can be, it's jaded. The only businesses that get listed on Google are the ones that typically will have great SEO and great websites. But what about that awesome restaurant right around the corner that doesn't have a good website, that mm-hmm. doesn't do SEO, but the food is amazing? That's who I want to meet.
Yeah.
And I recognize there's no way for those people to be found. And they can't compete on traditional forms of media. They just don't have the revenue to do so. So I really wanted to develop a platform that is affordable for that small business in the worst part of town, even though they might be the very best partner for local consumers. And we're just the tool to connect them. So no matter how big a company is or how small, everybody's the same on the app.
Wow. So then how does those businesses that might not generally be noticed or not use traditional forms of media, how do they become aware of you or you become aware of them?
Yeah, everything is powered through community. So what we do is we partner with local organizations, normally chambers of commerce.
Okay.
Chambers of commerce have done a fantastic job with the B2B world, and we want to be their B2C partner. So we promote our platform through the chamber, but then also we ship out window clings to businesses that join us so that local consumers are the ones that are aware and they tell us who they want to see.
Okay.
They know about that small restaurant, that small dentist, and they want to help that person be promoted. And because our price range is only from $50 to $100 per month, we're not breaking the bank for most businesses at all.
Yeah. So it's really reliant on then if someone frequents somewhere like Babette's Cafe or a smaller business, they can, it's the patrons of that business that really will tell you about it. And they say, we want to have this on the application. We want to have this available.
Correct. And we also remember as well, a lot of the business owners are also consumers. They
right.
go yeah. to coffee shops, they go to dentists. So they'll see it as well. And it's free. It's free for consumers to download. So we kind of go okay. after a community for users first, and then we pivot to, hey, if you have a business and would like promotion, you can do that. So we give these businesses the ability to push these notifications whenever they need to. So okay. I was telling Babette earlier that in a lot of the scenarios, you know, there might be some restaurants that have open tables at this exact moment, and they want to get them filled. And they know their price points. They know what offers they're able to push. Well, with this platform, instantly at this exact moment, any restaurant can say, come by for lunch and receive half off of an appetizer or get a free drink on us. And when they click send, every one of their followers will get that message. And now we all have a decision to make. Where do we go to lunch?
Right. Yeah. But then how if a business, a small restaurant isn't ascribing to using the traditional forms of media, then how do you kind of bridge that gap and say, well, we're different. We have this and just show them that paying that price point is worth it. How do you kind of bridge that gap?
Yeah, we model our platform very similar to Facebook because, okay. I mean, Facebook has 58 million business pages. And of those 58 million business pages, only about 2.2 actually advertise on the platform. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like everybody in this room likely still has a MySpace page, which is forgot to go and delete. People
no.
are from...
No.
Some of us still use
not
them.
Marla.
Do you even know what MySpace is?
I do. I'm well aware with what MySpace is. I never had one, but my brother did. So I know what it is.
She had a paper on it years ago. So a lot of businesses are familiar with how to utilize social media platforms. And we mimic a lot of those features that businesses are accustomed to. And we even allow businesses to import their Facebook profile to make it easy to get set up as well. So that's kind of how we bridge it. You know, not a lot new to learn. A lot of the things that we have on our platform, they've already seen, even going back to MySpace.
Okay. So from the time that you started with City Smart to where it is now, where do you anticipate it growing? What is your vision for it?
We're excited. We have big plans. There are 28 million small businesses in this country that we want to reach quick, fast, and in a hurry. So we've done a lot in a very short amount of time. And we are raising capital right now so that we can go and build out our team and scale into other markets faster. So we have now about 26 markets that have already told us yes. And we're looking to grow to 612 markets by our third year.
Wow.
And the sooner the better. We really feel that what we provide now is not only just a value to small businesses, but there are consumers out there that need this. It's tough to really get connected to your community. It's a shame that some people can live in a city for decades and not know about this amazing business that's right around the corner from their house. And yeah. everybody can really be familiar with that. You know, you just happen to run by something. Oh, I didn't know that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And give them a shot.
Yeah.
You know, they're in your neighborhood. Go and explore your city.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to get some real time counsel here. So one or two of these 26 markets, you're mm-hmm. in them and you've got something going there as well. Yes?
Yes.
All right. So we're trying to do the same thing at Business Radio X. We have 5 studios. We want them all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have one in Savannah. I don't have one in Charleston. I've got somebody in Orlando that's indicated a little bit of interest. I do have Phoenix. How do you crack that code? Like, what are the things you do early in that process? And maybe some of this will transfer to what we're doing.
Well, I think it's all about cross-branding. You know, consumers are really smart. And they have a lot of options, but they don't have a lot of patience. And rightfully so, because everything for them now is all about sales, sales, sales. So companies collect data and then they use that data to try to sell them products. So consumers are very savvy with what they adhere to. So cross-branding is key. So for us, we partner with locally like businesses and organizations and chambers of commerce and business associations and municipalities typically do the trick for us. Once consumers jump on and they realize, man, this is a value to my city, the same way they shared Facebook, they share our type of platform and even your platform as well. Facebook did not do a national campaign to ask businesses to join. we all kind of find out from our kids or cousins, and it just happened. You know, so when you provide something to consumers that they like, everything else kind of comes from there.
All right. So let's get tactical for a minute. Thank you. But I mean, it is partially my show. So talk about me for a minute. I'm quite serious about wanting to go to Savannah. Mm-hmm. So maybe some of the early steps are sit down, talk with the chamber folks, economic development folks, and just try to serve them first. Is that like?
Yes, it's all about value. I mean, you guys are Business Radio X. Mm-hmm. I mean, so they offer a very unique audience that you can reach out to immediately that need your platform.
Right.
Again, right now, the vast majority of small businesses don't have your type of resource.
They're not getting the media coverage. The traditional media is not sharing those stories.
Correct.
Right?
Well, because you got to look at the traditional things that businesses have to do. You got to go and hire a publicist. You got to pay a PR consultant to do those things. And the average small business is just not able to do that. You know, so working with a company like yours will help them get promotion that they desperately need. There's not very many ways to do that nowadays without it being costly.
So when you say that you're trying to build community, build in different markets, so and relying on chambers of commerce to do that. But have you found that when you're branching out into these different communities and relying on, you know, the consumer, the people to really promote this and bring it about, spreading kind of by word of mouth, does it differ based upon community to community? Or have you found that you have this set process that kind of just transcends all different markets?
Well, so we partner with chambers. We don't necessarily rely on them to help us grow.
Okay.
We use mass automated marketing to really kind of get the word out.
Okay.
And again, the first thing we do with businesses is not to say advertise your business. We say download this free app. Try us out.
Yeah.
See if you like it. And typically what we end up getting is a lot of inbound leads saying, hey, I'm an attorney. How do I get listed? I'm a dentist. How do I get listed? And then we go from there. We provide in each market a microsite that explains everything the app does for the business. And they like it. I mean, the primary thing they love is the price point.
Okay.
You know, to be able to spend $50 to $100 per month, but instantly reach your audience every day.
Per month or per year?
Per month.
Wow.
But it's so many applicable uses. I mean, in instant revenue. I mean, to be able to push a notification when you know that you have a slow night, or if you're a chiropractor and you have a new service that you right now don't have a good method of informing your audience about, if you can get them to download the app, which is how we also get users, and then follow your profile, then everybody wins. They want to be connected with you.
Yeah. And so how can you ensure then that that particular business owner or small business person is reaching exactly who they want to reach? You can say that with confidence that if you use this app, if you pay the $50 to $200, you are going to reach exactly who you're targeting, exactly who you need to reach. How do you do that?
You're going to love this. So the way we get downloads of the app is actually from the businesses. So your favorite local coffee shop, you likely go to at least once or twice a week.
Yeah.
They will incentivize you and say, listen, download this app and follow our page and we will give you a free cup of coffee.
Okay.
You have a smartphone. It's free. Why not? And businesses have been offering incentive to consumers to do things for years, all the way back in the MySpace days. So we're no different. The benefit for the business is that when they offer you this half off or this free cup of coffee or whatever discount or incentive they offer, 2 days from now, you get a notification on your phone that says, hey, come back and try this new product. We have the new Americana Blonde Latte. And you go, you know what? I like this coffee shop. I like this type of coffee. Let me go and give it a shot. Or you have your favorite local restaurant, Babette's, who pushes you a notification and say, hey, listen, we have this beautiful sauce that you can't drink, but you can give it. You know, come try it now for your chance to win X, Y, and Z, or even just a welcome message.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't always have to be an incentive. People want to stay connected with places that they like. And what we found is that some consumers, like my wife, will follow every business. I'm the type of consumer, I'm going to be very specific.
Right.
I'm going to a barbershop that I like, a couple of restaurants, and maybe a golf shop. And I'm it. That's it for me. And we're also working on doing some future things. We offer businesses the ability to get geofencing, which I think is going to change the game. So imagine walking in a retail area and every business you pass by, if you fit their demographic, your phone buzzes with some sort of offer or message. And if you get sick of it, you just turn it off.
Wow.
So Lennox and Phipps and those retail areas would be nuts. But the thing is, in an 8-mile radius around every city or every consumer, there are likely thousands of offers right now. The problem is the businesses just don't have a good medium to get it out. And consumers don't have time to go and research everything.
Yeah.
We just want to be a medium to help businesses connect with consumers, and whatever happens from there happens.
Wow. So with the geofencing, does the customer, when they have the app, they can put in their information. So if they pass by a store, or pass by a shop that is aligns with their pre-selected, correct, whatever it is, it just buzzes and lets them know.
Correct. Yep. We in our next iteration, we allow consumers to actually choose their interests, health, fitness, food. Wow. And if you pass by an area, your phone will buzz and you will likely be incentivized to come in and give that business a shot. The whole goal is, I mean, there are thousands of businesses in each city that consumers just don't give a shot. I mean, we really want people to get out and experience their city. 90% of the revenue generated by small businesses comes from people who live within an 8-mile radius.
Okay. Wow.
So most of it.
Yeah.
And the problem is those businesses just have a very difficult time reaching that audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, what methods can they use that won't break the bank?
Yeah. And so with that, though, that adds, it seems, another real level of complexity, just having the customer has to enter in more information and then the business has to offer up more information. So how close are you to really kind of breaking through that? I mean, is it going to be a while before all of that is in place, or do you see a timeline for that?
Well, we have everything in place with the exception of the geofencing.
Okay.
The benefit during the sign up process, and again, this is where technology kind of helps us out. People can sign up on our platform in literally 3 seconds. You just select the sign in with Facebook, sign in with Google, or you can log in with your email and we have the information already. The only thing you do from there is choose your interest. So we make that graphical. So it's nothing you have to type. You touch food, you touch fitness, and you click next, and you're done. That's
wow.
It.
It's that simple.
It's that simple.
Yeah. Well, it is really interesting, everything that you're doing. So what's on the horizon? Do you guys have anything coming up in the near future with City Smart that we can promote, talk about?
Yeah, definitely. Well, we are looking to scale and grow into cities. So if there is a market that somebody is definitely interested in getting growing, you know, you call us and we come to you. You know, we want to get this thing out through as many local business partners as possible. And it doesn't take much. Because we offer each business their own network, our app works with one business or 1,000 businesses. Okay. Because that one business will get their audience to join their, to download the app and follow their profile. And we can provide benefit to even just one. And all the other features that we provide, local events, news, traffic, weather, those things just come by default with each app as well. So it's also a resource for consumers where they can also stay connected with the community without having to have so many apps. The average consumer uses 9 apps a day and 35 apps a month, and it's growing.
Wow.
So something really cool that we kind of figured out is that we can find the coolest apps in an individual area and just include them inside our app. It doesn't compete with us.
Oh, wow.
So our app has Uber. Our app has OpenTable. You know, you don't have to download those apps on your phone. You can get them through our app.
Wow. How is that possible? How are you not competing with them? Is it just you're offering some service that's completely different than that? Or,
well, yeah. Our goal is to provide consumers the best resource. So if we can find a really cool app that consumers in the area like, we're not in the restaurant reservation business. OpenTable is. Right. I don't mind partnering with them. You know, we're not in the car service business. Uber is. But the consumers, the second you download our app and we use Uber's API, OpenTable's API, and they provide that to companies like ours for free to get them promotion as well.
Okay.
You now have all those apps in your phone with one download.
Wow. So that's how the partnership works. You're allowed to use those apps for free. And they just get customers driven to them from your app directly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how it works.
Yep. And we love local apps too. I mean, so if there's like a cool business here, in any market that we work in, I would much rather use the local version of Uber as opposed to Uber, or the local version of restaurant app, restaurant reservations as opposed to OpenTable. So we kind of have that luxury to pick and choose, and we open it up to those businesses because it's a value to the users.
Yeah.
So if consumers download our app and realize, man, this app has like 9 things that are amazing, I've never heard of them, that helps us. So it's a mutual benefit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we wrap, I want to hear about your work with young entrepreneurs.
Yeah, man. I consider myself one of the most blessed people ever. One of my early mentors is a guy named Jameer Jackson. And I've watched him go from a 26-year-old, you know, CPA down in Albany, Georgia, to chief financial officer at Nielsen Media in New York. But he introduced the internet to me. But in a different way. The internet for everybody else was chat rooms. This guy started a full-fledged drop shipping business in his house.
Wow.
And my buddies are talking about, yeah, you got to go to chat room and net zero and AOL. I'm like, wait a minute. This guy has like a business and three computers when it was all brand new. So he completely messed me up when it came to like working for corporate America at that point. So I've been so fortunate to have great mentors in my dad and Jameer and a lot of my buddies' dads as well that, you know, just want to be able to give back. You know, there's so many great ideas and concepts out there. And sometimes a lot of young people find it difficult to get somebody to lend them an ear. And, you know, I'm all about, you know, reaching down, like people have reached down to help me out as well. So, any young entrepreneurs that are out there, you know, that are looking for an ear, somebody to give them some feedback on a project, I'm always open to it. And I mentor kids around the country as well, primarily for that. And then, of course, we also deal with life. Life is always a part of business, especially mm-hmm. entrepreneurship as well. So definitely a passion of mine for sure.
All right. Before we go, what can we do to help? Is there something we can do maybe to help you with your some of your newer clients and customers, giving them some exposure, mm-hmm. maybe work them through and give them a chance to be interviewed and profiled on the network? That's an idea. But what are some ways that we can help? And what do you need?
That's awesome. And two big ways you guys can help. One, I need you guys to grow. I need you guys to get into more cities ASAP so that businesses can have this resource. And secondly, I would love to get some use cases on air, you know, so people can talk
absolutely.
About, you know, how effective it's
Let's
been for
that.
Them in their market as well. But first, you guys get in more cities quickly. We need you.
So let's do that. Let's do like maybe like a small business spotlight kind of series connected with them. I mean, everybody wins from something like that. And yes, we'll take all the help we can get in spreading. And we are putting a lot of energy and effort in that. Okay. Coordinates. What's the best way for people to do? I guess the best thing for them is to go and download this app, right? So where do they do that?
So if you are in the South Fulton area or travel there a lot, definitely go to the Apple Store or Google Play Store and download the SoFu Guide. You'll see there are a lot of neat things going down in South Fulton. If you're interested in more about City Smart, our website is gocitysmart.com. You'll find our email address and contact information there as well.
Well, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us, man. I sense you are certainly a kindred spirit and looking forward to collaborating with you going down the road, man.
Definitely. Now I'm going to eat some of this food for the best and go to sleep.
Yeah.
All right. Stay with us. Hang out. Eat some food. We're going to visit with one more guest, okay?
Awesome.
All right. You ready for the headliner, Katie?
I am.
She's been so patient. She's not even eating her own food. Should I be nervous about that? Or do you think she's just
She probably already knows what it tastes like. She's like, I know it's good enough. I don't need to try it again.
All right. So I had three of these things while you guys were doing the interview.
Good.
And oh my goodness. They are fantastic.
I'm excited to
and
try
I suspect
one.
It's only one
you
of the
You should save
of stuff.
Me one. Don't eat them all.
All right. I'll save you that one right there.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us chef owner of Babette's Cafe, a real favorite of our previous guest, Hawkins. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Miss Marla Adams. Hello there.
Good morning. Thank you.
So did you pick up anything, learn anything valuable in that last segment?
Well, social media is a big concern for restaurants. And unfortunately, after 25 years in business, I'm finding that a lot of my time is spent on social media and getting words out in platforms. Right. And this direct link, I actually kind of invested in a little company that sent text alerts. They were in beta testing to guests when we had last minute openings, and people loved the connection. I thought it would be a bother because I'm old, but they very much loved it. So it's you know, it's what everybody does. You know, it's a time consuming. Instagramming, Facebooking. It's a big job. It's a big job.
So Marla, what is Babette's Cafe and how did you come about finding it?
Well, I started it 25 years ago. I've been in the restaurant business for 38 years. Mm-hmm. And I know I don't look that old.
You don't.
But it's radio.
You should be all hunched over and haggard for 30 years in the restaurant business.
And, my back's shot. But I started the restaurant on a shoestring, and I based it from the movie Babette's Feast, which is that's a generation ago. Actually, it's on Broadway right now.
Oh, they really?
Recreated it. It's a short story, and it was made into a movie. It won the best foreign film, and it was about a woman chef in a very austere setting, and it was a woman housekeeper, and for this dinner or this event. She took some lottery winnings and created this incredible dinner, and it changed the the community. It's a very beautiful story about food and what it can do to a group of people. So
it impacted you enough to want to start your own restaurant, start your own business?
No, start my own business. I had hit a glass ceiling, honestly, working for some other companies. And, you know, I just didn't know what else to do. I mean, I was just a crossroads. Mm-hmm. So I had some support from my parents. You know, in the old days, you could open a restaurant on a shoestring. Mm-hmm. Now you need investors and millions of dollars. So, you know, it was just a point in my career where it was that or nothing, because I couldn't go back. And I didn't feel comfortable going back and working for somebody else. So
why a restaurant? You just have a passion for food?
Well, I have a degree from the University of Virginia in Russian studies. And I was going to go into...
Makes perfect sense.
Yes.
I was going to go into the agency, you know, quote unquote agency. And that summer, I grew up in Northern Virginia. My father was in the agency. So, and then I just took a break and I said, oh, I think I'll just, you know, go work in a bakery for a summer. And my father was very upset. And I loved it. I just liked working with my hands. I said, you know, I can get paid for making pies and cakes and, you know, standing on my feet all day. I mean, it was a craft and it was a different part of the brain. And I just fell in love. So I continued to cook for a few years and then went to the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park. So it just... I found my thing.
Did you feel that you needed to go to the Culinary Institute to get some level of higher education before you opened your own restaurant, or was that another step? Okay.
Well, again, you know, women in the business were, 30 years ago, were not on the same par. In some instances, they still aren't. So I had to go get some credentials.
Okay.
And then I came back. I moved to Atlanta on a lark and thought I would go down there a year. And here I am, 35 years later in Atlanta. And the food business was just kind of blossoming with the restaurants. And I always had work. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I'd open my own restaurant because it's a headache. Mm-hmm. But you just get to a point that you just don't want to work for anybody else anymore.
Yeah, I got it. So you said you always had work. So were you kind of like freelance? You were doing events and
No, I worked for other companies. I worked for Bucket Life. I worked for the Peasant Corporation, which you might remember, mm-hmm. but not many people do. Again, another generation. And I opened a hotel during the Olympics, the Penta Hotel. So I had I had about 15. Well. As a staff member, as a chef within one of the restaurants. So, and they sent me abroad to open a couple of other restaurants, another hotels. I had some experience.
Wow.
Before I did it.
So when you opened these restaurants, does that mean you were the head chef at those?
No. I was just actually at that point, I was in the business side and the cost control side. So,
okay.
But it was an opportunity. It was an opportunity to live in hotels that were half finished and,
wow.
People think, oh, that's so great. And it's like, well, you know, you don't have hot water. CNN is the only television station on the air. Sorry. I'm not supposed to mention another. But, you know, every I hurt my back and had to get out of the kitchens for a while. But then I got into food and beverage, the management. I learned all about the computers, point of sale systems. You just kind of have to take what, you know, life gives you and learn from it. So without those experiences, I wouldn't have been able to have a restaurant survive and, you know, excel for 25 years because it is very dollar oriented.
Yeah. So from beginning with the passion of loving to, you know, work with your hands and working with food to going through all the way through the business side and learning from that aspect, was it hard for you to have kind of switch gears and do that from working with the food directly to switching to the management side? Was that challenging at all?
It was, but in my own restaurant, and part of the reason I'm a one restaurant girl. I mean, I haven't expanded on, you know, I'm very hands-on in both areas. I have chefs, I have kitchen managers, I have bar managers, you know, I have a management team. But, you know, if I lose a manager in one area, I go out there for a year and then I lose the manager in another area and I go back. So I haven't. And in the meantime, there's all these other challenges with the friggin' internet. You know, life was so much easier before reservations and the internet. But so I don't like the management as much, but I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. And I want my team to progress and learn, and I challenge them and I push them and I get my money's worth out of them. And they like working for me. I have some people haven't, but I have some people that have been with me for a long time.
Yeah. So of all of the experiences that you've had from starting working in a bakery and then all the way through now traveling and being in Atlanta during the Olympics, of all those experiences, what would you say helps you the most in relating to your employees now and imparting upon them wisdom or just sharing your own experiences with them? Would you say there's a particular experience that helps you the most in doing that?
It's maybe a negative experience.
Yeah.
I worked at one of the hotels, and when I went into management in the hotel, my boss, the general manager of the hotel, I went to clear a table, and he said, "Oh, no, no, you should be telling somebody else to clear the table." And I was like, "She's busy. The table's dirty. And the customers are around. I'm going to go tidy the table." So I am very hands-on. I mean, I like pouring a glass of wine for the guest. I like, you know, I brought bread and water to a table the other night, and they go, "Oh, my God, the owner is, I can't believe you're doing this." And I was like, it's what I like to do. So I like polishing silverware. I like cleaning shrimp. I mean, not so much the shrimp anymore. I've cleaned a lot of shrimp, but yeah. I think that's what makes Babette's unique, is that I'm there. I don't have I'm not just looking at spreadsheets. Spreadsheets just put me to sleep.
But it's true. It adds that level of, it's so personable having the owner of the restaurant come out and serve you, or come out and just pour your wine, pour your glass of water. It adds that level of intimacy that's different than, you know, a bigger restaurant or one that maybe uses so much the traditional forms of media like we were talking about before.
I mean, I use all those forms of media too. And yes, I do. But it's just what Babette's is. I mean, I think it's very unique in Atlanta. And we've been there 25 years, and there are a lot of other restaurant groups that have been open 25 years. Everybody says, you're the only one. But, you know, Bacchanelli has been around. Soda Soda's been around. I don't want to plug too many of my competition, but... you know, we're all of the same age, and we all have been doing it a long time. And I guess we're all figuring out our exit strategies, but I don't have one yet.
Well, that's good. But coming out on you said you've been around for 25 years in Atlanta, and then coming, just going through the internet age and everything that's come up with social media, how have you kind of stayed in front of that? I mean, clearly it's the history and what Babette's Cafe is and what it means and that personal touch, but how else have you stayed in front of it and still been around for 25 years and been so popular?
You just have to adapt. I mean, any business has to adapt.
Right.
It was a big change for us. And at the beginning, we were all very excited about it because it was, wow, this is just so easy. It's just a great tool. But now, you know, the algorithm help is, so now I have someone that I hire to do Instagram and Facebook, photographs. And we tried to do it in-house and we couldn't do it. And now local search and web designers. I mean, it takes a lot of time and it's very frustrating and it's very expensive. But
yeah, it's crazy how much.
And it takes away from what I want to do.
Exactly.
But
how are we doing on the, I don't even know what the right word is, which may be part of the problem. Gender equity, women being able to make it in this arena.
I think that they're very capable. I think that... some of them go and raise families, and they're not in a position to work the evenings and the weekends. I find that with the new cool dads, that's a problem with the men too. You know, when they have young kids, I've lost some people to their children. I think that a lot of women, when they get into the older restaurants, you know, I'm talking maybe 10 years ago, the cooks, the ladies were kind of kept in the cold station, the pantry, the salads. And, you know, I just always, you know, push them and said, no, you're doing this now. And I think there are a lot of women in the business, but it's not conducive to families. I raised a daughter, my husband and I raised a daughter, but we had a unique situation. He was a detective with the Atlanta Police Department, and he worked the same hours as I did. And, you know, we paid a lot for nannies the first few years. And then he retired and he became the primary caregiver. And he did a good job. Yeah. But the opportunity, I think, is there, is if the women are going to just take the challenge. Women are a little shy. Oh, I don't know how to do this. And they back off a little bit. And I think men, on the other hand, say, yeah, I can do
We're not shy enough.
Yeah. And then they can't. So they don't listen. So they fail. So there's pros and cons of both. So you deal with them differently.
As a, I mean, the owner of Babette's, and just how do you impart that upon your employees and just people that come into your work, and between men and women, trying to bridge that gap and making them understand and helping them to understand, again, utilizing the experiences that you've had?
You know, I tell them some stories, and I tell them, well, I did this before you were born. And, you know, I just, it's the way you treat them and what you expect out of them. And you see the other members of the staff see it. And so it's just the way Babette's has always been.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, it's a tenant, I guess, it holds it, and how you've been able to be around for 25 years. Yeah.
I've succeeded in some male kitchens. And I've surprised them. And, you know, I'm not afraid. I'm cautious, but I'm not afraid. I'll do it.
Where does that fearlessness come from?
I'm vain, so I don't want to fail. And I don't want to look bad. Yeah. And that's probably the strongest.
I want to hear about Chef Justin.
Well, Justin is actually leaving us.
Ouch.
Yes. We're talking about, yes, there we go. He's leaving. He has a young son, and the shifts are killing him. So he's taken a job that is during the day. Wow. So I have a young woman on my staff. I have a couple of guys that have worked for me for 18 years.
Wow.
15 years. And they know the kitchen inside and out. And I have a young girl that joined us last summer. She's not very young, but she's younger than me. And she is just going to be, you know, the candidate to take over the ordering and, the cost controls and kind of as a kitchen manager. So it's an opportunity actually for her to step up and be given that opportunity. So, I mean, Justin and I thought we would go into the old age together. He's a great, great guy, but things change, and I have someone on board, and I'll probably be back in the kitchen a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of excited about. My friend of the staff is sick of me out front. I get in their way. So we'll see how it works.
What are these things that Donald and I have been feasting on?
These are pierogi of pork and veal.
Pork and veal.
And onion. Oh, and
melt.
And the dough.
You start talking about it. Donald has something.
Okay. I brought Katie. Okay, you can have one more, and then Katie gets some.
I've had like four or five.
They're almost gone.
It's a pastry we make. I mean, we make everything in house except our bread. And this is supposed to be a tarragon reduction sauce with it. But my staff and customers will cringe if they hear this. But my husband was cleaning the kitchen, which I was very happy he did. And he threw away my little ramekin of tarragon reduction. So it does not have all the tarragon it needs. But pierogi, they've been on. It's actually a dish from my aunt. My father was Albanian, so I grew up with a lot of Middle Eastern influences. I lived in Istanbul as a child.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of, it's just a little meat pastry.
Well, it's delicious.
It looks great. And so is a big part of what you do too then, creating new recipes, coming up with new dishes? Or is that just, do you draw on like your heritage, draw on family recipes?
I do some family recipes, but they're a little too Middle Eastern. I'm trying to do European provincial. Google has made us French because nobody Googles European provincial cuisine.
Okay.
So we kind of come up with, So we come up with French. And my husband's been saying, you can't do that. I said, yes. But we, you know, we tag Italian and Spanish. So we're trying to be Southern Mediterranean.
Okay.
And I come up with dishes, but, you know, I go back to it's the food, and it's kind of my sense of the vernacular of food. So what you would get in a farmhouse in Europe, you know, you're not going to get foam, and you're not going to get food stacked high. You're going to get a lamb stew. You're going to get what's out of the garden. We're very seasonal. You know, the seasons don't really mesh in Georgia with what you might think. So we wait on English peas, and we wait on, you know, Maryland crab, and, you know, so we wait on those things. So it's the menu's constantly evolving. And I have some items on my menu that I can never change. The pierogies will never go away. And then, I rotate the rest, or I come up, but I'm always kind of looking back to, you just have to put your head in a different place. And it's a very different place from the marketing and the, you know, cost controls and that kind of thing. So, you know, I have to kind of get out in my garden and think about the food and what goes well, or what's coming in now. Nice. You know, you have artichokes. Well, we insist on California artichokes. They're much nicer than the Mexican artichoke. I'm sorry, but we all buy a lot of produce from Mexico, whether we know it or not. And, you know, so I'm using them here, and we're going to use them there, and let's try something new with the artichoke. So the food kind of dictates where we're going.
Okay. And so do you find yourself having to kind of set up different amounts of time to, I mean, give mental space to that, just so to think about the business side of it, but to also take into consideration the quality of food and where it's coming from and what you want the dishes to be in the seasons? Is just kind of two different mindsets? Or
it's two different mindsets. Mm-hmm. And it's at least two different days.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to go in and say, I'm not going to look at these numbers. I'm not going to do this. Wow. I'm not going to answer these phone calls. And then, of course, you come up with the dish, and you've got to go back and you've got to cost it. You've got to see whether the value is there, what you can charge for it, or what is going to be perceived as valuable. Or so you have to then apply it to the business. But and that's what I find very challenging, even with buying wine. Or, you know, there are just so many different parts of the restaurant business. So if you're bored, you are not pushing yourself. There's a book to read on wine. There's a winemaker to study. My husband and I just went to California, and we drove through Santa Barbara. And I said, you know, there's a lot of good wine that comes from Santa Barbara. And he goes, no, there's, and we, you know, vineyards here and vineyards there, people we buy from. So it's very exciting business.
Yeah. I mean, and it certainly seems like that.
It sounds better on radio. It really is.
Great. It's super exciting. So is there a particular story maybe of a patron that's been coming to Babette's for years, and maybe a dish that impacted them, or just maybe a reason why they keep coming back?
I think we have some front of the house people that have been with us a long time, and they're comfortable. It's a white tablecloth, older style restaurant. It's quieter. I mean, on Saturday nights, it gets pretty loud, but it's a quieter restaurant. I'd say that the biggest compliment I had was I had a long, long time customer pass away. And in his will, he left a party at Babette's for all his friends.
Oh, now gosh. That is class.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yes. That's the highlight. But no, we got a lot of regulars, but you know, we try and get new people too. You've been open 25 years, and you need the younger people. Mm-hmm. I'd say our target audience is 30 and up. Don't need the really younger people that are looking just to drink a lot.
So. Yeah, there's a clear divide. Yeah.
Oh yes.
So how do you get the word out about Babette's, and how could we learn more and visit you?
Well, we talk about who we are, and I don't want to say it's Marla, but this is my staff is they're all in the are all as committed to Babette's as I am. We have a email list, you know, just people knowing the story and people knowing what really goes on behind a restaurant, and you know, the lives and impacts, and the, you know, people that you take care of amongst staff, and whether you have insurance or not. We're a small company. It's cheaper if they don't get insurance through us. You know, but you try and take care of them. It's just telling the story. And we send out emails, which we have about 5,000 people on our email list. And you have to sign, you have to come into the restaurant to sign up. We don't have online sign up, because we want you know, it's one-on-one. And so that is actually our best marketing is the emails. I try and just do them once a month. And Facebook, and someone's taken over Instagram. I don't do Instagram. I don't know how to open the app, but we're getting traffic. You know, it goes, I know I was watching one of your shows recently, and they had, you had a food blogger. Mm-hmm. So the food bloggers, right. It's just familiarity. More times people hear your name. So you go to events, you do events.
All right. So best coordinates, website, phone number, email. What's the best way?
BabettesCafe.com.
BabettesCafe.com.
You'll find everything there. It's a nice, very expensive site.
Well, Marla, thank you so much for coming and hanging with us. Thank you so much for the marvelous food. We really should leave that last one for
Grammy.
For Katie. And thank you both for being part of the show. This thank has you. Been a lot of fun and absolutely just beats the heck out of working, doesn't it, Katie?
It does.
All right. This is Stone Payton for Katie Galley and our guest today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.